hard to know sometimes too, like, was it that it was so important for me to be invisible when I was in a larger body that I was trying really hard not to take up space? And that's why people were reacting the way they were to me of being invisible, because that was kind of my goal.
Yep.
Or is it that they actually felt that way or treated me that way? It's really hard to know sometimes, because I also know I would go out of my way to not do things that brought attention to myself.
Yep.
So I would wait till everyone cleared and then go through the door. So I opened it, closed it. No one else could or would, or, and then no one can reject me by not doing it for me because I'm preemptively doing it for me.
Hey guys, it's Mel, your host of the Cutting Edge Podcast. This is a show where we talk transformation from every angle, body, mind, and confidence with a little sparkle and a whole lot of truth. I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Dr. Omar Betas, and the plastic surgery pro, and Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, our go-to therapist and mindset queen. Now, quick disclaimer, none of us are your doctor or therapist. We are just here sharing real talk, real stories, and real growth. So grab your protein shake, settle in, and let's get into it. This is The Cutting Edge.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy. And your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cutting Edge Podcast, where we give you all the updated information, mental health, and plastic surgery. And I am your host, Mel. And today we're going to go over the fear of the unknown. We're in the fear series right now. We've already done anesthesia, so now we're going to do the unknown, because I know I get really scared of that stuff, being like regretful. So I'm so happy we have our experts on. Ashlyn is our bariatric therapist, and we have Dr. Betas for our plastic surgeon. So let's get started, y'all. How are you doing?
Good. This is a good topic.
It is.
I realize I say that every time we come on here, but like, I'm like, this is a good one.
It's a good one. Yeah. Do you see it a lot in your practice, Ashlyn?
It's interesting. I think I see the fear of regret more than people who actually have regret. And usually when people actually have regret, it's complication-based or unrealistic expectation-based, or I really thought my ex was going to come back and love me-based, not actually like everything went relatively fine. I got the results I expected, and I regret it. I think it has more to do with one of the other subjects that we talk about. But I think people fear that they will regret it more than I see people who actually regret it.
That's good news, guys, for those that are listening.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say, Ashlyn, in practice, that's true. I think I can probably count on one hand the number of people who've had some kind of regret from surgery. But the fear of it, I think, is there. And I would say far more often than not, we have people who say, I wish I did this sooner. You know, I should have done this years ago. Why did I wait so long? And then we have people who do have some fears, you know, I think we've talked about this before, like mothers, for example, are afraid, especially if they have younger kids, like, I'm afraid of something happening to me and then I'm not here for my kids. But usually on the other side, they come out saying, man, I'm ready for my next stage, you know, if we stage them, or I should have done this sooner. But I do think people who have some kind of regret either have a complication. And a lot of times complications are no one's fault. Patients do tend to blame themselves. I feel like that can be a whole other topic.
Hey, friends. This episode is sponsored by findabariatrictherapist.com, because bariatric life is full of ups and downs and everything in between. But you don't have to go through it alone. findabariatrictherapist.com makes it easy to connect with therapists who truly understand your journey, the mindset shifts, the identity changes, and all the real-life challenges that come after surgery. Because therapy designed for bariatric patients changes everything. Visit findabariatrictherapist.com and find your support today.
Oh, yeah. To unpack. Or as you said, it was an unrealistic expectation. Like, I expected this and I got this, and now why did I do this in the first place? I regret it. Or as you mentioned, maybe, you know, having some goal, which not really the purpose of plastic surgery. Our goal is not to make you get your ex back or get the, you know, the man down the street or the girl down the street by making your abs look nicer. So that's not really what plastic surgery is intended for.
No, it's basically for me, like I think plastic surgery is for like getting like feeling yourself and being exactly where you're at, like where you want to be, like mentally, like you're like, I have all this skin. Let's get it removed. I almost call it, see it like a reset button almost, where like, you know, like I know how to eat now. I know what I need to do for exercise. I got my therapist going. So you know what? Like it's almost like the last thing of the journey is to get the plastic part. And so like it's very scary because you're like, oh, it's the end. It better turn out right, right? Like that's the fear part, like coming in where you're like, oh, I don't know, like am I going to regret this? Because I do know people in the community within, like, they don't regret it, but they do have those blues. They say that they kind of have some sort of depression, or they kind of recluse for a few weeks just because their body is changing so much, and they're just like, I wasn't expecting, you know, this, like the swelling and what I was going to look like. So, what do you say to things like that when you hear that?
I think that one often is realistic expectation issues. So, like my clients that think they're going to wake up and kind of look closer to the end product. And even though maybe they've been told or talked about it, they're still like, oh my gosh, I still look fat. I still look, because they're swollen, but in their brain, or they were like feeling good and did a little too much, and then their pain increased. And they're like, oh, you know, this is what it's going to be like. Or they felt better and then kind of had some kind of setback. And then I do see that kind of blues, but I think part of that just may also be like needing to rely on others usually is not a position a lot of people like to be in. So if, especially like day after day after day of needing to be, and maybe that person is getting a little worn down on being a caregiver to you if that's not a normal role. So I think, again, some of that regret may come more from they didn't realize they were going to need multiple days. They really thought, oh, I'm fine, I'm independent, I bounce back. Am I, you know, and then kind of those thoughts of, am I as young as I thought I was? Like, was I really up for this? Was I physically up for this? I think sometimes too, you may not eat enough. Like there's all sorts of things, you know. So then, is it more like your blood sugar is not great, you know, because you're eating crackers and Gatorade? Like, is it something more in
That's
that
what
way?
I do. Is that not healthy?
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the only thing you're eating and
Gatorade.
drinking, then yeah. But, you know, as a snack,
Yeah,
you're totally fine.
you
I'm
want to
not a
ride the
Gatorade person,
wave.
actually.
No, I was like,
I
yeah,
know
you want to
neither.
ride the weight of blood sugar, empty carbs and Gatorade sugar.
We
And
do
that's
recommend
real.
electrolytes or some electrolyte drink post-op.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Gatorade, but
And crackers. And
and crackers. Well,
and crackers.
have
Do
they
like
taught?
crackers. Sometimes that's my lunch.
I love me some crackers. Don't you even worry
Some
about that.
doctors are like the worst about feeding themselves.
I
I
believe
mean,
it.
sometimes we don't have time. Like on my Mondays, like today, we do these big surgeries and I might have like 20, 30 minutes. And I will try to get lunch, but every once in a while, like if it's a long case and we're not, like today we flipped. So I have like 20 minutes while they're reprepping and draping and getting our sterile field up. But other times we don't flip at all. And so it's like a 8 to 5 surgery and I might like run out to use the restroom, get a drink, and then I'll have like a cereal box or something. So definitely not the healthiest lunch. But
Oh, damn.
anyway, that's not the topic of this.
This isn't, but I definitely have a question real quick. What, like, I know what it means to flip them, but how do they do that?
It depends. People do it different ways. We usually like to just flip on the same table if we're going from working on someone's back to working on their front. If we're working on their front and then going onto their working onto their back, we usually bring another OR table because usually what that means is like I might do a tummy tuck and I wanted to harvest some fat for a BBL for the back, but we flex the patient on the OR bed so then I need to flip them this way essentially and kind of keep them in that flex position.
Wow.
So then we bring another OR bed, set that one up, and then just flip them onto the second bed.
Okay, online I've seen this smushy bed where it smushes and then it flips them. Is that what you have you ever seen that crazy bed? It like
I
flips
haven't.
them.
Does that exist? I don't think. How is that possible?
I don't know.
We
Next
were
time I see
hoping
you,
you
I'll send
had
it
one.
to
You have to send it. Yeah, no,
You
I
guys
don't
like
have one. That might
physically
make
just
life
move?
easier.
Do
So
you
you
just
move them?
physically move them?
Just a
Yeah.
bunch of people? Oh.
Yeah. Usually
So
me,
there's some
just
kind of
myself.
contraption. Oh,
yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I no, it's usually like 4 or 5
I
people.
was gonna say, yeah, that's like dead weight. Like that's not That's not good.
Okay, so there's no special bed that's flipping people.
Not that I've ever seen or heard of. I mean, like I said, that would be an interesting contraption if it's out there.
Yeah.
All right, next time I see it, I'm going to send it to you.
Yeah, send it to me.
Yeah, we need to look at that one. So, okay. Sorry, we squirreled for a moment. We had to know about the flip bed.
I think that is interesting because, like, how do you not, like, mess up all the sutras and everything when you, like, flip them over? Don't they get, like, smushed? It doesn't, like, rip open or anything?
No. I don't know. People, it's funny. Nurses have kind of been concerned about that, but we've never had an issue.
Yeah, that's kind of good to know for post-op because I'm always terrified I'm going to, like, rip the whole thing. If you've, like, flipped me and moved me all around.
Yeah, I mean, we're delicate, right? And essentially, we're just doing this going, like, this way or vice versa. So we're not, like, tugging and pulling and pulling in different. I think if you haven't, like, pulling in different directions, then you might have friction and shear. But we're even though it sounds undelicate, it is a delicate procedure.
Okay, so the other bed goes up to that bed and then you just kind of flip over.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So or sometimes like we just will kind of pull them over to where they're hovered in the air and then roll them over onto the same. Like we don't bring a second bed in depending on the type of flip that we're doing.
Wow.
This must be harder.
Sometimes you suspend them from the ceiling and do like a little.
It must be harder with when you have larger patients.
Yeah. I mean, again, most of our patients, you know, BMI is like 25 to 30, maybe early 30s, maybe low 30s. So usually they weigh under 100 kilos. At 100 kilos, we can flip someone with 4 or 5 people. We can flip from belly to back or vice versa with a team. Once patient gets over 100 kilos, unless we have like a big nurse in the OR, he probably weighs like 200 pounds and can lift like 600 pounds himself. So
nice.
Unless he's in the room. We probably are flipping on another bed. Yeah.
Nice. Wow. Okay. I like that.
Interesting.
I know people are going to ask, how much is 100 kilos to pounds?
About 220.
220. Okay, cool. Well, yeah. I'm way under that. So
yeah. Good. Yeah. Once you get to 220 pounds, it's tough for me and the team to lift you unless, again, we've got some stronger men in the room.
Okay.
Or women, I guess. But yeah.
Well, because that could be a fear of just like the fact of like, hey, I'm getting a 360 done. Now you're going to flip me. What happens if you hurt me? Now I regret it. Like all the things.
Yeah, I don't know how much patients think about having to be flipped when they're going into the operating room.
Honestly,
did you ever have your back and front worked on at the same time?
Yeah. So when I had
they would have had to flip you.
That 360 lipo, I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't even think of that until we just started talking about it because I was thinking in my head, I'm like, I don't think I've ever been flipped. And then I was like, well, I definitely was.
You would have had to have.
Because they worked on the front and the back. So I was like, oh, I guess I was not awake for it, clearly. But I also had that kind of like anesthesia where I could do things. So maybe I kind of helped them.
Maybe.
Flip.
We just do these things asleep. It's just easier.
Yeah, that's true. So cool. I think that's the only one I would have had because my arm. No, everything else was the reverse tummy tuck and all that was just on one side. The when I had my back lift, they probably had to flip me because they wouldn't have done my arms from the back, right?
Some people will. If your scar is on the back of your arm, they can do it on the back. If your scar is on the inside of your arm, then they would have
done
it
on the inside. So yeah,
they would have
to flip you. Too. My first one. Again, didn't think about it, didn't ask.
Yeah, I don't think people think much about that. I've been asked that question like once or twice.
So you don't just offer that information? You're not like, by the way, we're going to flip you, blah, blah, blah.
No, to be honest, I feel like there's so many things to talk about during the consultation. Unless the patient has a specific question about that, that's not something I'm going to bring up. Or, I mean, yeah, we talk about 360 and we'll do the front and the back, but we don't really talk about like how we're going to flip it.
You know what is one thing that I've seen on like online is where people were trying to get like lipo only tummy tuck, like where like they picked the wrong surgery, but then spent a lot of time online trying to like validate why they picked that. And like be like, oh, I didn't need the full tummy tuck. I just got lipo. And then I saw one where then like later on she came out and was like, I regret that I didn't go the route that I should have gone. But I was trying to become the face of this like scarless, maybe it was scarless tummy tuck. I don't know. It was where they were just doing lipo, but the girl really needed a She had she needed tummy time. So I wonder too if there's some, like, if you're going to become the face of something online, or you're trying to get into like a niche, either like a procedure. I don't know. Again, I think the regret comes in that you didn't pick the right procedure, so your results are not the one that you hoped for. Do you ever see that? Or were you told them, like, this is not going to get you the result you want, and then they come back and, like, you're right?
I've had a few of those for sure. Luckily, it's pretty few and far between. Either they don't come back or they've gone to someone else to fix the complication, right? I mean, I think that's one of the issues with plastic surgery being so common, but also being kind of invaded by other practices. And I mean, like, everyone wants to do plastic surgery because it's money and it's not through insurance. And you've got your, like, my wife's gynecologist office offers Botox. She sent me a picture the other day. She's like, they offer this here, but it's like a gynecologist doing it, right? And I think it was at our dentist's office.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone wants to get into this aesthetic realm. And the problem is some people aren't trained as adequately, right? And so, or maybe, and they may not be training, it might just be, I don't want to say ethics necessarily, but, you know, primary care has a CoolSculpt machine. So now everyone that's walking through their door is a candidate for CoolSculpt, even though they're really not. But hey, I can charge you $3,000 because I've already paid for this machine that's sitting in my, you know, one of my exam rooms. And if you're not happy, then I'll just tell you, you know, this is what the machine can do. And you should have, bless you, should have gone somewhere else, or, you know, can't help you anymore. So I think you have to be careful. You know, most weight loss patients, I see plenty who come in and they might say, I only want lipo, or, you know, I kind of want the CoolSculpt thing. By the way, that's like cryo freezing fat. Okay. And so very non-invasive, is in the office, no anesthesia. And it's like 3 sessions, but it's pretty much as expensive as 1 session of liposuction, which will get you the same result. For weight loss patients, you are not the lipo kin, unless you lost like 10 or 15 pounds, but that's not what we're talking about here, right? If you're a weight loss patient, any of these like lipo only, CoolSculpting, M-Sculpt, all these kind of non-invasive or minimally invasive things are not going to fix the skin problem that weight loss patients have. So you have to treat the skin. And unfortunately, you know, I also got patients who come in and say, I'm going to just build muscle and work this skin off. That doesn't work. That's not how the body works.
Nope. Not at all. You can fill it in. Like, you can fill it with a bunch of muscle, but you're still going to have some hanging. Like,
correct. You're going to still have that loose skin.
Especially your arms. Yeah. The amount of muscle that you would need is just not logically. Yeah. I don't know. I have some especially, clients that like, that's probably not what's going to. I think you should still do it. I think you should still go to the gym and build muscle, correct, but not to fix your arms.
Right. Because like I see it with us women, like it's just not like we would have to have a lot like huge muscles like Hulk for that to work. And it's like, girl, you're going to get good muscles, but it's still going to hang. And that's just going to hang just because of gravity and the way that our body was and because we got so big and whatnot. So it's like
where you hold your weight.
Yeah. It's just nothing you can really do about it. Like, it's going to happen. Like, I'm actually prepared for that when I'm like 50, 60. I'm like, yep, it's going to be there. I don't really care. Like, this is the aging process. So just go with it.
Yep.
I hope to be as graceful as you in older age. I highly doubt I will, but.
I've accepted it a long time ago. I don't know why, but I have. Like, it's probably because I thought I was going to just be big my whole life. Like, I had no thought in my head that I wasn't going to be a big girl. Like, all my whole family's big. So I just assumed at 16 that this is just what Mel's going to be like.
This is normal. Yeah.
This is normal life. This is what it looks like. And we have big people around us all the time. So, you know, they're good and they're really not good. I didn't know, like, until I was big through my 20s and realized this is uncomfortable. This is exhausting. Like, I'm on the tiers of becoming diabetic. I'm on like the fringe of having high cholesterol and having problems. So it's like we had to nip it in the butt at 28 because I could have been in the problem areas. So it's like you come to terms with things early, but yeah, like things can always change, guys. Just know, like, you have the capability to change anything. So just, you can get the surgery, you can take the shots, take whatever you need to like lose the weight. You can go see Dr. Betas, get the shit cut off, And then you can be a whole new person. I don't think anybody should regret it.
What about regret of, and I don't know if this fits into with this topic, but regret of how people will see you or how your relationships will change, whether it's your spouse, your kids, your parents?
Yeah, I think this one is tough too. I know I had, just today, I had someone make a comment to me about how they would never date a big girl. And because they have no history with me, they don't know that I am formerly a big person. And so they didn't realize that that may be offensive to me.
Yeah.
I didn't take it offensively, especially because of my job, but like it was interesting because I don't think he realized what he was saying in the presence of someone who used to be that person. So I definitely think, especially since I've had all the skin removed and have a thinner body, there are a lot of people that do not know that I was formerly obese, because I have now had almost as much life being non-obese as I did obese. Not quite. I've got a little more. 2012, 13 years. No, that's not right. Like a third.
Third, yeah.
Adult. Okay. I've had more adult life. And I have a lot of people who've only known me this way, who never knew the formal size body I had. So that I think sometimes will hit you, not intentionally, but I do think that that does sometimes come up. But I think also the flip side of maybe a partner that's more interested now that you have fake boobs, who's a little more interested now that you are. And sometimes I have to warn people too, because sometimes, so I had a client come in years ago and that was kind of the case. But what I kind of sensed was actually her confidence was up. So it wasn't necessarily because her body changed with the surgery that her husband had more interest. I think it had to do with she had more interest and was more less self-conscious. And so he, I think, was reacting more to that than just her body. But I do think that stuff.
The confidence, you mean? He liked the additional self-confidence that she gave.
Yes, because she no longer was covering up and worried and this and that. And then like, turn the light. Like, I think he just was reacting more to her, like, fancy free about things, where before it had to be very constructed and planned. And
you got some new lingerie, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, that sometimes, again, can be painful, especially if you misinterpret that. Or maybe correctly interpret that now your spouse is more more attracted to you. I think also there may be concern that that may happen, and then that would fulfill a fear that you thought your spouse wasn't particularly attracted to you. But I think for a lot of people, like, your body's not going to be perfect. Mm-mm. So it's not like you come out of surgery and you're Barbie. So... Okay. You know, I don't think that's as common, but I do think either the way people treat you, or even in stores or out and about. I mean, there definitely are differences when you're in a smaller body, or assumptions made, or Mel, if you've had that happen, like where you're out, so yeah.
Oh, 100%. Like it's very wild. You know, when I got smaller, like, people are opening doors for me. People chat me up all the time. It's very, I get, you know, eyes locking on me. I have, like, I've had whistles, I've had hollers. Like, it's crazy different than when it's ever been in my life. Like, even, like, last Friday when I was dashing around, I was like, why is everybody, like, checking me out today? This is kind of weird. And I was like, oh, because I was in, like, a lighter color legging. So you could see all of my curves. And I was like, oh, shit, okay. Because I got hit on by a cop on a bicycle. I was like,
how professional.
Yep. He came right over to me. Right on over to me once he saw me, and just chatted me up as I crossed the street all the way to the corner. He wanted to know where I was going. Yeah. I was like, you saw me from afar and you're like, I'm going over there. So the reactions are just so vastly different. And even with my ex-husband, I remember we had sex once and he was like, I want you to know that, like, I'm not like, we're not having sex more because you lost weight. And I was like, to be honest with you, I didn't even think that. And he's like, and I was like, but good to know. And he's like, no, like your confidence is through the roof. Like you will walk around naked now. And before that was not, nope. That was like a long t-shirt, underwear or like shorts or, you know, leggings. And now it's like, I will actually get out of bed and just like go to the bathroom and not like, I have to put things on, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard to know sometimes too, like, was it that it was so important for me to be invisible when I was in a larger body that I was trying really hard not to take up space? And that's why people were reacting the way they were to me of being invisible, because that was kind of my goal.
Yep.
Or is it that they actually felt that way or treated me that way? It's really hard to know sometimes, because I also know I would go out of my way to not do things that brought attention to myself.
Yep.
So I would wait till everyone cleared and then go through the door. So I opened it, closed it. No one else could or would, or, and then no one can reject me by not doing it for me because I'm preemptively doing it for myself.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to know that balance too, but I do think it is hard when you gain some confidence back and people respond to that, to not internalize that as, you know, the world is fat phobic.
That's so interesting, I guess, because like, I mean, I feel like if I open a door for someone, like if someone's if I'm opening a door and someone's coming out or someone's behind me, I don't feel like I look at, I just hold the door. I guess maybe not everyone's like that, huh?
You're a gentleman. You just naturally do it. Not everybody does that. That's
crazy.
But again, it's
so you notice a difference after you lost weight.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Oh yeah. Huh. Oh yeah. Cause when I used to walk from, okay, you guys don't know this area, but it's like four blocks. When I worked at the Department of Revenue, you had to pay for parking in the, if you wanted to pay for parking in the building, it was like $120. I know. It was yep. The Department of Revenue was making your ass pay $120 to park in their parking lot. So I parked five blocks down and it was only $20. So when it was before I had surgery. So I would walk back and forth every day. No one would talk to me. No one would look at me. Nothing. And then about 6 months, 8 months later, I'm losing the weight. Now I have people literally saying hi to me. There's eye contact. Like people are smiling. Like it's interesting. I'm just like, is it because I'm more like smiley and confident, or is it because, you know, I was bigger, now I'm smaller? Like, I don't know, but I do understand. Like I remember not wanting to get the surgery because I was afraid of everyone else having comments about it. Like, oh, she's doing this because she's vain, or she's doing this because she just wants to get skinny. It's not about health, like, you know, things like that. So I do know, like, that's a regret, like where like I was a fear of regretting it because of all the comments that I was getting, but like actually, it turned out amazing.
Yeah,
no one says that anymore.
Never heard of anyone calling bariatric surgery like someone doing it for vanity. That's hear that a lot about plastic surgery, right? But not about heard it about. That's crazy.
Huh. Yeah, Ashlyn's like all the time. Yep. Huh. People are weird. People are weird.
Yeah, it's like a multifaceted, because it's like you're taking the easy way out. You should just diet and exercise.
There's I've heard the easy way out part.
Yeah, you should
not vanity. Like, who gets weight loss surgery for vanity?
Right. Because if their belief is just that it's going to make you skinny,
yep.
you just don't want to be in a larger body anymore.
I guess same people thinking plastic surgery is
vanity. Yeah, it's the same people. Yeah. It's the same people that are just sitting on their couch doing nothing, and they're just like, you know,
one thing I think I was afraid of kind of in this, is that like people would just have so much to say.
Yep.
Aren't you just happy that you're in this body to begin with? Aren't you just happy that you lost the weight? You know, like how, and I did, I mean, I had some people that were just like, you're taking this too far. You've done too much. And I'm trying to explain like, no, I just didn't have enough money to do everything at once. So we've been doing it in like piecemeal. So yes, it seems like I've had a lot of surgeries, but if I could have afforded it, I would have done it totally different. So that sometimes is hard, especially when it's coming from people that not 100% jealousy, but like maybe are saying that because there's other emotions at play versus just 100% or strictly because I'm concerned about you, or I think you're getting addicted to plastic surgery, or
Because it's a thing, right? People get addicted to plastic surgery.
I think I would be a good therapist here to see that
Yeah, you answer
this. Doesn't quite work that way, but I do think people get the feeling that things can be fixed quickly. And I think, I don't know, addiction isn't just like with food addiction. Right. I think addiction isn't quite the right word there, but people definitely do get not obsessive, but like to a point where it is unhealthy. And or they're striving more likely for something that doesn't exist.
Ah, where they just keep going.
I think it's chasing an unrealistic expectation is probably the person who's addicted. Or, and I mean, I feel like you see the guy on Botched. I've only seen like a few episodes, but there was a guy who was like proud. He had like 100-something surgeries, like his nose, his calf implants. I think they turned him away, those two guys. But I don't know. I don't know what he's chasing, like a Ken doll. I think he wanted to be like a Ken doll.
Yes, I think he has a literal...
That's got to have some psychiatric component to it.
Yes, I just think maybe addiction's probably the wrong...
I wouldn't say an addiction, but I don't know what he... I guess you could become a Ken doll. That's not totally unrealistic. I just don't know...
That would be 100% unrealistic. He's fake. He's not a real person.
Well, but looking like a Ken doll...
It's like, you can't be anime. They're fake. They're not real. Okay, I saw something today. Implants that have RGB lights in them.
What the fuck?
It's a thing in Asia.
I said China.
Yes, yes. I saw it today. I said, oh my God, I have to ask.
This isn't Canadian. Real.
So
this,
has anyone... Really?
No, I don't know. I'm
Where, okay, I'm gonna
what's
send
good
you
is
that
it lighting them
too.
Up if they're under your skin, like where you can't
see
the color?
Yeah, will you see it?
There's some kind of light in there, and they have some kind of contraption to like.
That can't be real.
Are you think it's AI?
It's gotta be AI.
It has to be fake.
You don't think they could put a little light in there? They put.
I think they. I mean, I think they could. Probably wouldn't pass. At least in the US, wouldn't pass FDA approval. But also, how would you see the colors through the skin? Like, you've got implant
it's
and then skin.
Shining. Okay.
I don't think so.
So apparently the light cannot shine that bright through your skin. Let everyone...
Shit, Ashlyn has seen on the internet that it's potentially fake.
Don't believe everything you see on the internet,
bed
kids.
Flipping and RGB implants.
That is wild. I know I would be...
Ethically, you could put them in someone in the United States. What would the purpose be?
I mean, I don't think ethical stops in the United States. I think it's unethical regardless, but I don't think the FDA would approve an implant like that.
No.
Okay, so the ethics would be in doing something that's not FDA approved.
Right.
No, I think the ethics are, like, why would you put a light in an implant, regardless of where in the world we're talking about? Like, there's no reason to have, you know, purple breasts. Yeah, I don't know.
And when you get them, it's not like you open them. Like, they're already all together. So it's like, you couldn't put a light in it. You would have to have...
Oh, no. This would be something that you order with the light already in it.
That is wild.
I just don't see how they would make that happen.
Yeah, I have to look this up.
What if
you're
going to
have
the battery?
To send that to us. Yeah, what happens if the battery dies?
You just plug your breast in.
It came up right away. RGB breast implants.
It's listening.
Of implant technology. As micro sensors that monitor temperature, pressure. Oh, wait a minute.
All right. It's taking a twist.
Uh-oh.
Hold on. Oh, no. It lights up. Hold on. I got to turn it down a little bit.
I don't see it lighting up. I just see a woman.
Ah! That's hilarious.
No. There's no way.
All right, everybody needs to go onto YouTube to see this shit because that is wild what she just showed us. There's no way.
So they currently have them at the Lynn Europe Clinic in Istanbul. And it has sensors in it. It also
changes based. It's like an aura ring. What's that thing ring? Wasn't there a ring that changes colors based on your...
Yeah, you're right. It's an aura ring. Oh my God. What kind of boobs are that?
Those are big. That's awful.
Is it real? Is it inside the implant or it's on the outside? Like it's a bra. That almost looks like a bra.
It's on the inside.
Was that a vein you said?
You could see the veining, so it has to be on the inside.
I wonder if that actually exists. I wonder, like, the integrity of the implant, is it compromised by whatever they put inside the silicone shell? Like, that just seems very unnecessary to use this product. And
oh, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Like, wait a minute, this is an April Fool's
joke. It's like at the bottom, she scrolls. Sponsored by Temu. Like,
hold on. Now we have to Google, is this April? Is this real? Real or April?
It cannot be real.
That's going to be Hot Topic Tuesday.
Seriously, people. Now that would be, well, that would be regretful. I would do that and then later on your battery dies.
It was an April Fool's.
Yeah, see, I mean, there's no way.
That makes way more sense.
Oh my God, that's so funny. It also says that it can't.
How did it come up on your Instagram then?
I don't know. It did.
For everyone wondering, we are recording in December, so April Fool's Day makes sense.
Maybe it's December 1st in Istanbul. April Fool's. Maybe they're like,
oh my God. No, this is not real. It is satire based on an April Fool's joke. All right. We're sorry, everyone. Okay. You cannot get glowing. So now make the technology. You could be rich.
It's like the I don't know if you guys have those, like, we have these like lights in our ceiling that have like a cord and you can change the colors, like it's fun for the kids.
Right,
like,
yeah. A little remote.
You can control it through your app.
Yes, yes. My son has those. I love those. But no, not in my boobs. Not in my body. No, thank you.
I'm sure there's a bra like that.
Yes, I'm sure there's a bra. It's great AI. AI, your game is good. Got me.
I know AI, this April Fool's. AI can, I'm sure, do some pretty good jokes.
Oh my gosh. All right, so you can Hot Topic Tuesday that is fake.
The RGB breasts.
I could see a lot of regret with that one. Getting like a trendy, something that's trendy and not. Can you think of any other? What about regret for people that go too big or too small? I have more clients have a little bit of regret for going too small.
Too small. Mm-hmm.
Versus too big. But I have never had anyone who has put in pushing the limits of what would be. I don't even know what you call that, like average size implants.
Oh, I mean, I know you're correct. Statistically, like a lot of studies have shown that when the number one reason actually for going back for an implant revision, like after a breast augmentation, is going bigger. So patients regretting that they went too small, like you just said. We use, and I don't know the data in our patient population, because most of our patients don't come back, which might be good, right? Might be bad, yeah. But we use we have a system called Vectra that we can take pictures of patients and then simulate different sizes, and then so they kind of see what it looks like beforehand. I'd say maybe in the last 7 or 8 years, they had 2 or 3 ladies who've come back. I mean, we're talking out of hundreds, right? So less than 1%, definitely less than 1%, who've come back and said, "I want to be bigger."
You ever had someone come back and say, and not that like set out to have kind of outrageous boobs and then like maybe their career or whatever reason they needed it. And then they came back and they're like, okay, I'm done with this era of my life. To me, that's not necessarily regret as much as
that's
just
different.
Like,
yeah. I agree. That's a different thing. When we talk about regret, we talk about like within the first 6 months or a year, they kind of like after all the swelling's gone, they look and they're like, oh, I wish I'd gone bigger. And then, you know, either they do it quickly or do it when they can afford it or when they can have the time to do it. I did have one patient who, I guess I should say this with a caveat too. So one of the few that I was just thinking about, she had her breast augmentation and lost a ton of weight. And a lot of that came from her breasts. And then she was kind of like, she almost needed a lift. So she kind of like lost some of the lift that she had from it. So her nipples were kind of down. And then she just lost some breast volume overall. So she wanted to go bigger. I don't know that I would count that as a like complication or as a, someone who really wanted to go bigger just because she lost weight and then needed to go bigger just because of the volume loss.
It is interesting. Actually, I was just thinking of one case that I have heard of, and it was a friend. And I think what happened with her is when she lost almost that reverse tummy tuck, when it was staged, that the breasts ended up being too big once they removed a lot of the skin, but they weren't too big prior. So it was interesting. Again, I don't think she regretted it as much as like she didn't anticipate that's what it was going to look like and then went in for a reduction of that because then So, but again,
that's interesting.
Slightly different.
Yeah, I mean, I have, you know, I think we all have kind of these like one-off stories. Like I have one lady who I did a lift on, and then she came back and she was like, where are my breasts? She was like, I expected you to just do a lift. And I was like, I did just do a lift. I took off like hardly anything from each side. We took off skin. Because, you know, in a breast lift, you can take skin only or you can take skin and tissue. And she wanted to keep her volume. So we did a skin only breast lift. She comes back 3 months later. She's like, this is, I'm like, I went down from a D to a B or something. And I'm looking at her. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
You're like, we didn't put an implant in. That's why we normally put an implant in, to make you back to what you were.
But the lift, you should keep the volume, right? I mean, so then we go back and we did, I think we did like another, we did like kind of a IMF reconstruction to try to give her more lift with some fat transfer, got her to a decent volume, and she drops, maybe not back to a B, maybe like a C. And then, So then finally I start going back. I'm like, well, you know, when I met you, and because this lady was from out of state, so she wasn't like coming every like 2 months for surgery. She would come every like 6 to 8 months. And so over like this 2 year period, I was like, when I met you, you weighed X amount. And at the last follow up where you were in the office, you had dropped 50 pounds. So now we're talking, You're a D cup. We do your breast surgery. Maybe you're still like a C, but you've lost some weight. We go back, we do the breast fat transfer, and you're back to a C. And I'm like, well, that kind of makes sense. If you lost 50 pounds over these 2 years that we've kind of worked together, which is unfortunate because it doesn't really solve her problem that she's unhappy with the result.
Right.
You know, so I don't know, sometimes having a reason is a good thing or not, or having an explanation. But at least it was like, well, you know, now at least we know why we did the lift and you kind of dropped in size, which is not as a result of the lift. Or shouldn't be as a result of the lift.
Would you suggest, so that way people don't regret this, is like, just get to the lowest you can and maintain that for a while? Because like, I know that you say 1 year, but I don't think 1 year is enough. Like, you know, like I feel like they should like be like outside of their like weight loss journey at least a few years and then maybe do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we want stable weight at a minimum 3 months, ideally six. And of course, you know, if it's a year, 2 years, five, the more the better, right? Because then it's just proven to yourself. I mean, at the end of the day, your surgeon owns your result to some degree, right? I always tell patients, the better you are in terms of weight stability, the easier my job is, only because if you can keep that, then you should maintain it afterwards. You know, and again, we always talk about plastic surgery is not weight loss surgery. It's not a weight loss method. So the longer you can maintain your weight, I think just proves that your long-term result, your result is going to maintain long-term post-op as well. But again, you know, we're not married to, I need you to be stable for 2 years. I mean, otherwise, I feel like your patient load will just kind of trickle back down. So
yeah,
it too depends on what your goal. Like I have some clients that probably will never get down to the lowest weight without having some level of skin removal, because an extreme aspect of why they're not able to move and be more active. But again, their goal probably is more in the like ability to function versus cosmetics or more of a reconstruction. So you know, if you're out there and you're like, I could not stand this for two more, you know, trying to be stable. It's like sometimes we do have to intervene, but it's different goals.
Yeah.
Well and I think Mel, sorry to interrupt you. I think at least what I heard is you said the lowest you can, right? That doesn't necessarily mean not like to say that if you can get to 100 pounds, you should stay there, but the lowest you can get to, maybe that's 150, maybe that's 180. Sometimes people get lower and then tend to gain a little bit. I feel like we see that a lot in weight loss patients. I don't know if that was your experience. You kind of come down, hit this like nadir, and then you come up, and that's usually where your stable point is a little bit higher than the lowest you've ever hit, but it's the lowest you can maintain.
Yeah. And I was speaking more too for like us bariatric patients, like after 1 year of being outside of that surgery, I don't feel like we're ready to have plastics, because we're still in that journey. We're still going up and down. We're still, you know, adjusting to the pouch. Like it's just, I personally wouldn't do it just because, and obviously I haven't, like I'm 10 years out, but it's because like, I want to make sure that I have that tackled before I go on to something else. And I don't feel like that honeymoon period is exactly what it is. It's a honeymoon period. So it's like you need to handle real life a little bit, because you, like, when you get your plastic surgery, you might gain or go up and then you go back down.
I love your lack of impulsivity. I wish I had that. I was like, get this shit off me and make it work. Fix this shit.
I was not going
to be patient and wait any longer.
I think it does depend, and you can kind of read a patient out, right? I have patients who come in, and I would say, Mel, you're right. It's I want to say never, or maybe almost never 1 year. Usually it's a year and a half, and very often it's like 2, 3, 4, 5. But we do get the occasional patient who's like 1 year out. They're at a BMI of like 22, and from the consult, you know, like, they're done. Like, they've lost all the weight they can. They're going to maintain. They're at the gym every day, you know, so like you can kind of feel them out. Mm-hmm. And those, I'm okay doing it at 18 months. But you're right. If they're like, oh, well, you know, I don't know. And they're the patients who know, you know, they're drinking 8 cups of water a day. They're tracking their protein. You kind of can tell they're doing everything right. I mean, I have a questionnaire when they come in. And if they've checked all the boxes and they have all the answers to the questions, those patients I know are going to do fine, and I can do it at 18 months or 2 years. There's others who come in who are like 5 or 6 years out or 10 years out, and you're like, how much protein you get a day? Then they start telling me, well, for breakfast, I don't want to know what you have for breakfast.
I don't need to know.
I want to know the number. Like, you should be able to spit off a number and tell me how much protein you get in a day. So when they start telling me what they eat, then I know, okay, this patient is probably not going to do as well, and that's maybe why they waited 5 or 6 years to come into my office. And again, that's not everyone. I'm just kind of telling you how we can read people from the consultation.
Yeah. Well, because I'm always afraid of regretting. Like, that's one of my, like, actual fears is regretting shit. So I analyze, I research. I'm like that person that takes forever to buy something, you know, like,
analysis paralysis.
Yeah. Like, I'm the one, like,
we'll figure that shit out later.
No way, Jose. Yeah, like, it took me about 4 months when I found my car to buy it. Like, I researched it, waited for it to go, like, even cheaper. Like, it was
you have 0% APR in this market. Tell me what you have. Give a shit. So you end up with a Ford Escape.
A Ford Escape. Yep. I have a, Nissan Sentra 2022. I love it. But yeah, I'm one of those that, like, it just takes a while just because of the fear of regret. Because
okay, now I'm curious, Dr. Betis, which side are you on with us?
Oh, yeah.
With what? Sorry. Oh, what side am I on? I'm probably in the middle. I don't think I'm impulsive, but I don't take forever either.
That's why it's perfect for us three to be together. It's like we are all on a different extreme.
It's funny, my husband has a lot of analysis paralysis, so the two of us have to, like, even each other out, because otherwise it would be bad if we both were like me.
I was going to say, my wife, I feel like, is more like you. Not always, but definitely more like, what about this? What are we thinking about this? And I'm like, just make a decision. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a mom thing, too, because we have to look at all different angles all the time. Like, trying to get someone to school, we're just like, okay, well, if he takes this long, then that's going to take long. And then the actual line there to let them out, like, there's just, like, things that can get in the way. So, like, you just start thinking of all the little things, and then you X them all out.
Well, it's funny, like, my kids go to school, and they have a uniform, right? And so one of the things, we were looking at a different school, and I was like, the school doesn't have a uniform. I'm not sure, like, you're going to be able to handle, like, what they pick in the morning and getting them dressed and all that extra time. I was like, you need an extra 30 minutes just to get them dressed.
It's true.
She's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Uniforms can be very good. Like, scrubs, perfect, right? Throw something on in the morning. The matter of picking what color.
I do have to say, when I worked at the dialysis unit and I wore scrubs, that was like the easiest time of my life for work stuff. I had a white coat I had to put on when I went on the floor, and otherwise I had like 8 pairs of scrubs that I just rotated in order.
There you go.
The next one, the next one, the next one.
Oh, I love that for you.
So comfortable too. Lots of pocket.
So before we go, is there anything about regret that you guys want to touch on for these, for our customers, for our listeners?
I would say, look at, like, be honest about what you're afraid that you may regret. Look at actual data to, again, what may happen for you may be different, but having realistic expectations, asking the right questions, being honest with yourself about, like, you're going to need help. If you're not comfortable with that, like, figure that shit out because you're going to need it. So if then it turns into this regretful thing, it's like, okay, I knew that going into it. Mm-hmm. Ask lots of questions. Get a therapist. I feel like that's always my talk to a therapist.
And where do they go if they don't know where to go?
Find a bariatrictherapist.com.
That's right. That's right. Sponsor of the show. What about Dr. Betas? Is there anything that you see on a regular that you're like, we need to address this now?
I think Ashlyn mentioned a lot of them. The only thing I'll add is that regret after plastic surgery is exceedingly rare.
Yeah.
It's extremely uncommon. And as she pointed out, it's usually, I don't want to say the patient's fault, but it's usually something intrinsic, kind of on the patient's end where they had an unrealistic expectation or they're not doing it for themselves or doing it for someone else. So I think most of my patients, again, and I think most plastic surgery patients are overall very, very happy. And again, the most common thing we hear is, I wish I'd done, I mean, like, if you call that a regret, the most common thing we hear is, I wish I'd done this sooner. So,
yeah.
I think that's just the testament to the power of what we do and the kind of part that we can play in people's transformations.
Well, and I'm sure that makes you guys feel good when you, like, get to see them later and they're all excited and they feel good. Like, I know that was, like, the best thing, like, after weight loss surgery. Once I lost the weight, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then my doctor was so excited for me. Like, I think that always helps reassure yourself that, like, you didn't do the wrong thing. And so if you guys need to have that reassurance, talk to your therapist, talk to your surgeon. I know I need that every once in a while just to, like, kick myself in the butt and be like, nope, you're doing fine. You did the right thing. Just keep going forward. So thank you guys for talking about regret today. It is kind of a touchy subject because a lot of us think about it, but we don't talk about it. So guys, if you guys have any questions for us, put them in the comments below. If you're on YouTube, you can message us on Instagram or email us. So just let us know if you need anything. And until next time, be safe and have a great week.
No regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets.
That, remember that movie? Anyone have that?
Oh, On the Knuckles, right?
Yeah.
Regrets with an A. Yeah.
I love it. All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.